Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit in survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
Today we are interviewing Shania Luther, the founder and director of Amongst Friends. Welcome, Shania.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
So I would like to start off with asking you, how did you get started in this business?
I was studying in my undergraduate work, I was studying everything to do with counseling, you know, everything to do with counseling, maybe as a, was thinking maybe I'd be a marriage and family therapist or something like that. Toward the end of my time in undergraduate school, I learned that my school offered a special certificate in sexuality education and being able to teach people about sexuality and healthy sexual development. And so I got a special certificate when I left undergraduate degree. I had a special certificate in that. And then I actually ended up going to seminary after that and studied to become a pastor. And every project that I could do on sexuality and spirituality, I did.
Can I ask you, what faith were you studying to become a minister for?
I was actually studying to become a pastor in the United Church of Christ, which is a relatively progressive Protestant denomination.
Oftentimes, you know, the subject of sex is a very taboo subject.
For me, I knew how much damage the church had done to people around their identities of, you know, their sexual orientation or their sexual identity or their, you know, healing or trauma or any of that stuff. And so I knew how much healing needed to be done. And at the time, I thought I would do sexuality education in the context of faith-based communities. You know, I really believed that that's where I was going to do that work.
So it's obviously led to some unique opportunities.
Absolutely. In fact, oh, and I should finish telling you how I got into this field. So I ended up opening a private practice after I left seminary and, you know, did some odd jobs, but I finally opened a private practice. And then I also took a side job helping people with developmental diversity do activities of daily living. You know, I just wanted to have a little bit of predictable income. And so I thought, well, let me do something that's meaningful. And pretty soon the families of the folks that I was supporting were like, oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. You're a sexuality educator? Oh no, you can stop. We don't want you to ever help our, you know, child or loved one. We don't bother with grocery shopping. Don't bother with, you know, fixing food. Don't bother with bank accounts. Like, we need you to talk to them about sex. And so I went back to my supervisor and I said, you know, I'm capable of this. I'm certainly qualified. I said, but it's not in my contract, you know? And she said, well, you know, there's a way that you can do that. There's a specialty under the state that you can do that. And I said, no, I don't know anything about that. And so lo and behold, that's what led me to discover behavior supports around sexuality and healthy sexual development. And the specialty she talked about wasn't specifically about sexual development, but it was about behavior supports. And then I just took my own expertise into that and developed social sexual behavior supports.
So what is your background and what services do you offer?
Well, so some of my background is that I did study to do counseling, and then I went and got a seminary degree. So it's called a Master's of Divinity, which gave me a lot of information about religious studies. And the nice thing about that, John, is that it helps me understand people's religious values around sex and sexuality. So that is often a great conversation starter also when I'm talking with folks. But then I ended up, I worked for a domestic violence agency for a little bit. And as I say, I started a private practice. So all of that is kind of what led me into this work. I've also done continuing education for over, you know, 20 years, you know, learning, going to workshops, learning new things, taking classes. So I keep teaching myself new things because it's important, or I go learn them from someone else. And I would say the services that we offer at this point among friends are what are called professional behavior services through the state of Oregon. And that means that we conduct a functional behavior assessment. We end up writing a formal behavior support plan, a positive behavior support plan. And then sometimes we do what's called ongoing supports. And all of that is to help people make sure that they stay safe, healthy, legal, you know, and then that they don't get into any trouble or find themselves in any situations that they don't want to be in. But more importantly, it's about helping people set goals and where do they want to go and what do they want for themselves. Oh, and we also have private pay consultation. So if people, for example, either don't receive, you know, services through the State of Oregon Department of Developmental Disability Services, they could have an hour or two of our time to help them understand some things or think about some things or create some strategies or get some resources. And so there's a lot of different ways that we can support people if they want.
You know, I'm kind of like curious, you said help people set goals.
Yes.
And when you say goals, is that like goals for dating, or is that goals for like maybe finding a hooker, or is that goals for like, hey, I don't want to wind up in jail or something else like that? You know what I'm saying? These, of course, those few examples I gave out are kind of broad and all over the place. But, you know, I mean, can you like really kind of like define some more of the services?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the you kind of hit the nail on the head. It is so broad, right? I mean, I've supported somebody who wanted to have gender reassignment surgery, and we worked on a plan to help them figure out how to proceed with gender reassignment surgery. I've supported somebody who wanted to learn how to cross dress. And wanted to supports on how to go pick out clothing. I've supported people who have wanted to go and pick out a sex toy or have some kind of, you know, device that they could use when they were by themselves. I've also supported a lot of people who wanted to learn how to date or have, you know, a possible romantic or sexual partner and wanted to set goals around that and try to work toward that outcome. I've supported people who were engaging in non-consensual touch and needed to be taught, you know, how to make sure that they ask for consent and that they only ask in the places that aren't going to get them in trouble or to the people that aren't going to get them in trouble. I've supported people who didn't understand how their behavior online was going to get them in trouble or could get them in danger, you know? And so when you say it's so broad, it is absolutely so broad because there's so many different things that are related to sexuality and sexual development and relationships. And, you know, as you say, maybe somebody's looking to engage with someone for paid sex work, or maybe somebody's looking to, you know, find a kind of a friends with benefits situation. But then we have other people who just want a traditional, you know, they just want to find a traditional partner, get married and have some kids, right? And it's everything under the sun. All of those things are true.
And I mean, okay, so as a business that deals kind of in the area of sex, mm-hmm. Obviously there's got to be you know, some legal barriers. Mm-hmm. And some gray areas, and you know, it's just kind of like, do you ever have a fear of you know, when somebody wants to like do something that helps them out but that is presently illegal?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such an interesting balancing act, right? Because first and foremost, people deserve information. And so, you know, they deserve accurate information. They deserve all the information, not just what's easy or fun or convenient, you know. They deserve to know all of the possible negative consequences, but they also deserve all the possible positive consequences of their actions, you know. So in that sense, if somebody wants to pursue something that is technically illegal, my job is to provide them with lots of information to make sure that they understand that it's illegal, right? And that they understand what that could possibly lead to, and that they feel like they make informed choices. The other thing that I think is really valuable about the work that we do at Among Friends, and that if anybody else is considering doing work like this, is that I think it's best to have a team-based approach. Because if you have a team-based approach, no one person is taking on the liability for anything. Right. You know, if, for example, somebody chose to do something, let's say they ended up sending a message to somebody who was underage, right? That's really problematic. And that can literally get somebody sent to jail. That is absolutely true. Especially if it's a sexualized message, you know, am I responsible for them sending a sexualized message to someone under 18? Not exactly, but I am teaching them how to explore and express their sexuality. But do they even understand age? You know, does that person, I've worked with people who literally didn't understand age. And so trying to help them, our job is still to help people stay as safe and healthy and legal as possible. But we need to help them also, we need to recognize where their own limitations may be and where they may or may not understand things. And then our job is to teach them more, right? Not to say, oh, you just can't do that, or you can't go there, or you can't, you know, do this other thing. Our job is to teach them, like, here are the boundaries of what's legal and what's not. And here's what's going to be safe and healthy and you can explore and feel good about, and everybody's going to celebrate. And here are the things that have potential downsides. You know, and making sure that people have make educated choices. But fundamentally, John, I'm an adult and I'm allowed to make my own choices. And so is every person with developmental diversity, right? And so it's really about giving information and making sure that they know as much as possible and then letting them make decisions.
How has COVID-19 interfered with your work?
You know, it's very interesting. I was on vacation when COVID-19 really shut our country down. And so when I came back from vacation, it was a whirlwind of a learning curve for me because I'd been gone for several weeks. But it definitely impacted us because we just had to stop all of our trainings. We had to stop all of our services and just pause, you know. And then as we started to look at it, we started to transition most of our sessions with people, our interviews and our functional assessments and our positive behavior support plan work, we could transition fairly easily to online. So we did that. We also were right in the middle of having interns at the time. And so that was really complicated also because we had interns who were working with folks. And so we had to transition all of them too. But then pretty quickly, I think the biggest impact was definitely on trainings because we probably had to cancel 7 or 8 trainings in the first 2 months that I got back, you know, and because they were all live in-person trainings that we were going to be doing. And so we got on a very quick learning curve of figuring out how to do trainings online and offer them via things like Zoom or, you know, or GoToMeeting or that kind of thing. And so we're still figuring some of that out, but it's a lot easier than it was back then for sure.
Yeah. Learning the new social media and how to connect with people has been quite the steep learning curve for me as well. And I only know Zoom and I need to learn the rest of it.
Yeah. And what I will say, John, that has been really hard is that I much prefer to meet in person. I much prefer to be present with people. I think this subject is hard enough on people to talk about. And then when you add the layer of now we have to talk about it through a computer, you know, that's a really frustrating piece about all of this, because I think it makes it even less comfortable than it was before for many folks. So that's a really unfortunate piece. And I'm hoping as soon as we're able to, that we'll be able to do more of our interviews and stuff in person again, because I think that would be really meaningful.
Yeah, I must admit, an in-person is far better than staring at somebody across a TV screen.
Yes.
You just don't get, I don't know, there's just something about being in the same room, staring at a person's full body and their body language, I guess.
Yes.
And then, you know, people seem to interact from that. I mean, even if you don't pick up on body language very well, there still seems to be some kind of interaction that's just always more helpful if you're one-on-one someplace together. I mean, I don't suppose it doesn't have to be a room. It could be out in a park or wherever person
feels right, right.
Comfortable. What are you presently advocating for? You do work with other individuals, and I'm kind of like wondering, am I talking to anybody and trying to advocate for something in the field or something like that?
Well, so let me give you kind of a picture of it. So for me, advocacy is at every level. So we advocate for individuals within their families, within their workplaces, within their schools. You know, we advocate on that level. On policy levels, we're advocating for organizations and companies to change their policies and to be more inclusive and to be more understanding and to see, you know, let's say, I'll tell you a funny story. There was a gal that I supported and she got a great new internship at a law firm, you know, through a friend of the family. And so she was really excited and the whole family was really excited for her. And, you know, 2 weeks in, they found her naked in the copy room waiting for the cute guy in the office. And so, you know, she didn't understand what the rules were. And so she made a major mistake, you know. And for me, I want to advocate for workplaces to use those as teaching opportunities instead of, hey, you're fired, you know, because I think it's so important, because if somebody hasn't been taught, it's really harsh to say, well, now you've just lost a great job opportunity, or you've just lost your housing, or you've just lost your schooling or whatever, because of one mistake that they weren't even taught about. You know, so I advocate for people on many different levels in those kinds of settings. In my trainings, I advocate for people to go back to their own agencies and change the policies there and make sure that they're including sexual health and healthy sexual development in their policies and in the way that they work with folks in this field. And also, I've been doing a Train the Trainer program with OHSU in partnership with OHSU. And one of the things that we do in one of the layers, one of the tiers of the program, is to have everybody write an advocacy plan of some sort. And so that can be, again, on the individual level, on a community level, on an agency level, or on legal law and policies, you know, for statewide or federal. And so my hope is to help not only help those things happen, but inspire other people to do more advocacy in all those different levels. At least, you know, if I'm not currently able to help them, you know, specifically with whatever their project is.
Okay. So would it be okay to give out your contact information at the end of the show?
Absolutely. I'd be delighted if people wanted to contact us.
And you know what? I thought of a question. And I probably should have asked this a little bit earlier. So I apologize for bringing it up right now. But am I wrong in assuming that it's not just people with intellectual disabilities, but even the neurotypical people who could have problems with sexuality and the whole transgender and sexual education and the whole dating and everything else? So it's not just an intellectual disability problem, it's also a problem shared amongst like the neurotypical person, or just, you know, somebody who has a physical disability, or, you know, any type of person who you know, even I guess the term asexual, if I've got that correctly, might have a problem with sexuality as well, maybe?
Well, maybe they're perfectly comfortable being asexual, and that's fine. But every type of person is going to run into issues that are troublesome around their relationships, their sexuality, and their bodies. Every single person on the earth is going to run into issues around those things. And so it is absolutely true that everybody's going to need some kind of support. It's just that when I decided to start to focus in on folks with developmental diversity, I decided that for me, that was a place where I could be extra helpful, because there aren't very many people providing those services. There are more people who can provide or do provide services to people who are neurotypical. And so for me, I just wanted to narrow in a little bit and be as helpful as I can in this community. And so that's meaningful to me.
In an ideal world, how would you like to see sexual services for people with disabilities work out?
Yeah, well, so many answers to that question. But what I fundamentally want for people is to live their full human experience and get to explore themselves and their bodies and their relationships and their connections in whatever ways feel meaningful to them. And so I can't promise myself to find a date, let alone can I promise anybody else to find a date. But what I can do is give people the skills and information and opportunities to find people to connect with, to be able to explore their own body when they have time by themselves, to be able to learn how to ask for consent when they are in a relationship, you know, so that they make sure that they are thoughtful in that connection with somebody else, to be able to honor boundaries and to honor their own boundaries and other people's boundaries. And what I can do is give people all the tools and skills. And then as they do meet people, they'll be better set up to be able to interact in ways that feel good to them and others. I would like to see any support workers be able to talk about sexuality and issues of, you know, bodies and relationships easily and without feeling awkward and, you know, afraid of talking about those things. I'd like for parents and families to be able to support the people that they love and to be able to talk about these things lovingly and with, you know, being able to talk about their family values, but also being able to recognize that the person that they are loving and supporting has legal rights and has, you know, their own experience in life to have. I would like to see policies at every level, from schools to cities to counties to, you know, states and the federal government that allow people to explore with resources, you know, both funding and also opportunities and access to different options for themselves. And that is everything from, as I said earlier, somebody who might be transgender wanting to explore being able to change their gender to somebody who might be looking to have, you know, a sexual surrogate or some other experience. And so I would want people to have all of those options. And I would want us to honor that in people. I would want us to express honor for that part of each person's life rather than being afraid of it or joking about it or being ashamed of it or any of that stuff, because I think it's so important to our health and well-being.
And would you call sexuality a basic human need?
I absolutely know that it is a basic human need, and all of the credible science and psychology and psychiatry information knows that it's a basic human need. And so it's not a question of whether it's a basic human need. It is a basic human need. And I even said in a training to some parents this last week, I said, it's also a biological drive. It's at the most basic level of our experience as a human. And so we can't ask people to stop it or ignore it. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Uh-huh. You know, what we have to do is support people to explore it in safe and healthy and legal ways, right? And all of the nuances and challenges that come with that.
I noticed that you said training for parents. Do you also train caregivers or PAs or case managers or anything else like that?
Yes, thank you for asking. I will train anybody on these issues. And I have a whole training menu if people want to contact us about that. I have a whole training menu of already created trainings, plus I can create custom material. So yes, absolutely.
And just out of curiosity, that training isn't necessarily just caregivers, but it could also possibly extend to somebody who's neurotypical as well?
Absolutely. I think that many of the trainings that I have created are generated towards someone who supports someone else in some way, because it's educating them if they don't know how to support somebody in these areas. But I've done trainings for individuals with developmental diversity, a whole group, many groups of folks with developmental diversity. I've done trainings for people who are neurotypical. I've had teachers in my trainings. I've had case managers in my trainings. I've had managers in my trainings. I've, you know, all different types of folks. And so I've had lots of parents come to a training that was sort of geared toward professionals. And so there's a lot of cross-learning that goes on, and it would be, I think, valuable for anybody who wants to learn some new things about these topics.
I have one last question for you.
Okay.
And what do you think are the steps that we need to take to make, to go in the right direction? Or how would you like to see the USA go into the right direction? You know, a lot less prudism and a lot more acceptance on.
So my hope would be that we would have conversations about sexuality freely and often, that we would bring it up in as many different contexts as possible. My hope would be that we would change policies to be more inclusive and understanding, and that would it would build bridges between people who see things differently, rather than, you know, oh, you think that way and I think this way, so we can't talk, you know. I would hope that we would be able to support people with opportunities and access to resources so that they could explore their own experience of sexuality in whatever that means, and that we wouldn't dictate, oh, it has to look like this, or it has to look like that, or it has to be this other thing, you know, because I do think you brought up asexuality earlier, and there are lots of people who don't even know what that is, you know, and so being able to teach people and explore things, but also make stuff a lot less shameful and make sure that we're not introducing or increasing people's shame around these topics, because it's so deadly. I mean, it literally is deadly. People kill themselves over not being able to, you know, say who they really are, or express their love the way that they want to. And that's horrible. That's the last thing that should ever have to happen to somebody. And I love Dan Savage's movement, It Gets Better. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
There's a whole movement trying to help people who are young and maybe are a part of a sexual or gender minority. It's a whole movement called It Gets Better, and it's testimonials from adults who are sexual gender minorities to talk to kids who might be feeling suicidal or in some other way, you know, ostracized from their families or their communities. And so it really is a beautiful thing that he's done to try to help reduce the suicide rates and, you know, and help get people support and help them feel optimistic and hopeful.
So do you mind if I get your contact information, please?
Sure. So my name is Shania Luther, and our business is called Among Friends. Our website address is among-friends.org. That's among-friends.org. And our phone number is 503-332-8783.
When somebody uses this contact, will they be getting a hold of you directly, or would they be getting a hold of somebody else?
Well, in this case, that is my phone number. I probably should give them the other phone number that has sort of a voicemail message in case they want to reach somebody if I'm in a training or something like that. Would you like me to share that one also?
Yes, please.
So that number is 503-832-0787. And that's the number that would have a voicemail message. And if even if I'm in a training or, you know, gone to do something for somebody, that there's still people who check that voicemail message. So if people have a more generic question, they can certainly call that number.
All right. Thank you for doing the interview today. It's been very informative, and I hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed being able to talk with you today too, John. So I appreciate you helping get the information out into the world.